You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, Locked On Jets podcast, Tuesday, February 26th, 2019. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Great to have you with us today. The NFL Combine kind of gets underway today as the first set of players arrive. You know, people will evaluate the combine, but I think it's best to kind of let that process play itself out. And then maybe at the end of the combine, we'll talk about guys who helped or hurt their case. We're kind of on the normal two-track process right now. We're focused on the draft, but we're also focused on the offseason ahead for the Jets as the new league year will be beginning within the next few weeks. So we're focused on potential trades, potential free agent moves for the Jets. And one thing I've gotten a request for from a number of different people is for me to share my thoughts on some of the key free agents I'd like to see the Jets go after. And I'm not going to do that today. Instead, I'm going to talk more about free agents I'd like to see the Jets avoid, guys who are projected to hit free agency who, you know, I think that I'd have a tough time with the Jets going after. And, you know, part of this is an elaborate process where you're making all these calculations in your head because contract size matters when you're talking about free agents. If a guy's a marginally productive player and he makes $1 million a year, that's a good signing because most guys making $1 million a year really aren't giving you that much. So if you have a guy who's marginally productive, you know, does a few things here or there, that could be a good move. That same guy, same production, at $10 million, he's a bad signing because you want $10 million guys to be impact guys. You want them to, you know, make a lot of plays. So if you're signing a guy who's only okay, who's marginally productive, who only makes a handful of plays here or there at $10 million, that's not good because that's $10 million that's not going to somebody who actually can make more of an impact. And that's one of the things you'll see in the NFL. Guys who are valuable to their teams on rookie deals become bad contracts, you know, become much less valuable when they get their second contract because a guy who's making less than $1 million and, you know, is helping, pitching in here or there helps your team, but he may not be worth a second deal that's worth a couple $1 million. Something you have to deal with. So I try to figure out guys who I think are going to be expensive, and it's one of the reasons. And I'm sure we'll get to some. I'm sure we'll do some shows on guys I'd like to see the Jets target, but some of the guys I'd like to see the Jets target, I won't know who they are until we get deeper into the offseason because I need to see what type of contracts they're going to get. And sometimes the most attractive free agents are guys who overplay their hand, who don't get deals as big as you think they get. You know, like the linebacker. Say there's a linebacker who asked for way too much money. So all the other teams just, you know, to heck with this guy. All the teams that need linebackers go and sign somebody else who's cheaper. Now suddenly there's nobody who needs a linebacker. So this guy's overplayed his hand. He may have to settle for a cheap one-year deal and try again next year. Or the guy who's coming off a serious injury, who's not totally healthy right now, who may need to wait a few months to prove that he's healthy to other teams. So those are some of the guys who can be really valuable in free agency. So what I tried to do is figure out guys who I think are going to require big deals to sign, and guys who I would really hesitate towards struggling to give them big deals. And I'll tell you, there were two big money free agents last year that I wanted the Jets to avoid. And I'm not saying this to brag, but there were two guys who I was very, very hesitant about the Jets going after. One was Kirk Cousins, and I knew he'd get a big money deal because he's a quarterback. He's a starting quarterback, so it's the most important position. And when a starting quarterback hits the open market, there're gonna be big bids. You know, teams are going to put up a lot of money. You look at what quarterback contracts are in the league. The big quarterbacks, they get very healthy offers. My issue with Kirk Cousins was, you know, I looked at him and he was fine. He's a competent quarterback. I don't think anybody would question that. But I'm not sure Cousins is the type of guy who's good enough that he elevates a team, that he makes it. You know, he's not a guy who's going to make a team worse. He'll take, you know, plays that are there. But is he the type of guy who can carry a team on his back and can make a team substantially better, help cover for other flaws? I'm not sure he is. Would I take Kirk Cousins in general? I might. But the issue with him is that you need to put the supporting cast around him because I'm not sure how much he can elevate a team. You need to put a good supporting cast around him. And the contract he would require would prevent you from doing that because you'd be giving him so much money that there wouldn't be enough money to surround the rest of the team with the proper weapons for your team to have success. And I think that's one of the things teams are learning in the NFL is maybe the most cap-crushing type of deal is when you give the quarterback who's just okay, the guy who's not great, the guy who's just competent if you give him that the type of the mega deal, because you can't put the, because this guy can't carry the load all himself, but the pieces who can help him you can't afford because you're giving him all that money. It's one of the things I think we've learned over the last, this is not something we knew 5 years ago, because the NFL is operating in a different financial landscape than it was. You know, the NFL, the new collective bargaining agreement was the game changer because it limited rookie salary, so it kind of reset the salary structure of everybody in the league. So a lot of teams, you know, the Andy Dalton contracts, the deals like that, they gave out these big money deals to quarterbacks who were just okay, and now they're struggling as a result. You know, the great quarterbacks, the Aaron Rodgers, is they're worth the big money deal, but the guys who are just okay are not. And I think, you know, I wonder whether we're going to start seeing NFL teams change the way they act. You know, teams get smarter over time. You think back to the early days of the salary cap, you know, in the 90s, teams had no idea what they were doing. So teams got into what people consider cap hell today, where you get into a situation where your cap is rough for 1 or 2 years. That was child's play compared with some of the things we saw in the 90s. We'll never see true cap hell the way we saw it ever again, the way it operated in the 90s. It's just something you learn as time goes on. So I did not want Kirk Cousins last year. So thankfully, I think the Jets avoided him. Unfortunately, the Jets did sign the other guy I did not want, and that was Trumaine Johnson. And, you know, there were some reasons I did not want Trumaine Johnson. First of all is, you know, you look at how few quality corners were available last year, you know, supply and demand. That means the price is going to be artificially inflated. And you look at Trumaine, what he's done in his career, I'd say he's a guy who, generally speaking, when he's been at the top of his, aside from maybe 2015, but when he's been, you know, at the top of his game, when he's been playing well, he's a guy who's probably a middle of the pack, number one type corner. He's not a game changer. And with the way teams are spending money, with the way the cap is rising, with the low number of quality corners available last year, you were looking at a guy who you're essentially paying like a superstar, guy whose presence alone could single-handedly raise the level of a defense. That was not going to, and that was just not going to happen with this player. That the player was not good enough to do that. But also what worried me is he had kind of had a down year in 2017. He did not have a very good year in 17 with the Rams. So you look at his age, he's at the age where some corners really go into deep decline, and that's something that concerned me. And now we're right back there. And it looked like after 2018, looks like that decline continued. So there's concern there. And that's one of the reasons I'm a little skeptical about, you know, I hear a lot of talk now, well, he's a better fit for Greg Williams' scheme than he was the scheme the Jets played last year. And I mean, maybe that's the case. Maybe that will prove to be the case. But I look at this and I say, well, didn't I just hear this a year ago? Because I remember when the Jets signed him, he was coming off the kind of down year with the Rams in 2017, and the Jets signed him, and he was supposed to be a better fit in Todd Bowles' scheme. So, you know, hopefully for the Jets, it does prove to be the case, but it's one of those things I'll believe when I see, and it was one of those things that I think was relatively easy to foresee a year ago. This had the potential to not be such a great deal. So I'm going to give you four guys today who I foresee getting big money who just would not be worth it. And that does not necessarily mean that I'm okay with anybody else the Jets signed at any other price. There are some moves that where I'm going to be able to see both ways. We're going to say, I understand why they did it, but I think this is risky. I think that this could end up not working out. But these are four guys who I'm pretty set on that they're probably not going to be worth the money they get, unless I'm totally wrong on the contracts that teams are going to give out for these guys. Locked On Jets podcast. I'm talking free agents I would like to see the Jets avoid today. And we're going to start off with two guys who play the tackle position. And I think that part of the reason I want to stay away from these guys is the amount of money they're going to be making, because as we all know, it's not a great situation right now in the NFL when it comes to the tackle position. There's a dearth of quality left. There's a dearth of quality tackles in the league. So when one hits the market, first of all, then the good guys typically aren't hitting the market because they're so valuable, because they're so rare. So when somebody who's just okay hits the market, it's going to cause that person to be overpaid because there aren't many guys who are even decent available, and lots of teams need tackles. And look, I think the Jets could use a tackle, but I just don't think these guys are going to be worth the money they're going to be getting. And I'll start off with a guy who plays for the team up in New England, and that's Trent Brown, who, you know, comes in. At this point, it looks like he's still going to be available. We'll see what happens. And one of the things you have to consider is the fact that sometimes teams work things out with free agents before they hit the open market. So, you know, we're assuming you can never totally assume 100% with 100% certainty that any free agent's going to hit the market till the day the new league year begins, till free agency officially begins. But I'm starting with Trent Brown, and this is just, and look, I think the Jets need to move on from Kelvin Beachum. I think they need to find a tackle of the future, but I think it needs to be done through the draft, because I just don't see. Yeah, I take it back. There might be a guy or two in free agency who could intrigue me, but I think that the big names are guys I'd probably steer away from, and Brown is near the top of the list. And I'll tell you what happens with a guy like this is people buy into the idea, well, this guy was the starting, you know, this guy started on the offensive line for the Super Bowl champions. And the problem with that is that treats having good teammates like it's a skill. Yes, he was on the Super Bowl champions. Well, that's because he had played with a lot of great players, including a great quarterback. So that's not, yes, I get the idea that you bring in a guy who's won a championship and he can kind of relay to teammates, this is how we did things in New England, you know, this is how hard we worked. That's great if it's a free accessory, but that's not the type of thing you'd pay extra for. Now, I look at from our friends Pro Football Focus, of course, do a great job compiling stats. And, you know, you look at Brown's pass blocking efficiency, he allowed 35 total pressures in just 579 pass snaps. That's not a great rate. That's nothing spectacular to write home about. But here's the thing. That's pretty pedestrian stuff. But I go a little deeper than that. You also have to consider the circumstances he was in. He was playing with Tom Brady, who, of course, gets the ball out very quickly. It's not just Brady has a quick release. Brady knows exactly what the defense is doing. He knows exactly what he's going to do pre-snap. So he knows how to get the ball, you know. You don't have to be a great offensive lineman to play with Tom Brady. And the fact that Brown's numbers are so pedestrian playing with Brady, that to me is a red flag. And, you know, I look at a guy like Brown and I say, you know, you do things the way if you want to acquire a guy like this, you acquire him the way the Patriots did, where they sent, you know, they sent a low third round pick last year to the 49ers and got a high fifth round pick back. And then they essentially use this player as a chip to trade down. They got this guy back in exchange for trading down. That makes, you know, they did not pay much for this guy. This guy, they said, you know, this guy could be passable within our framework. We won't give up much for him. We'll give a low three. We'll get him and a high five back. That makes sense. That you have to target the next guy. If you really want a guy like this, you have to find the next guy who's going to come cheap. You don't give this guy a big money deal. And I understand, you know, people are going to say, well, that's easier said than done. Well, of course it's easier said than done. But that's what the good teams do. That's what separates the good teams from the bad teams. They find guys they can obtain on the cheap. A guy like this, again, I go back to price. A guy like this, if you can get him for cheap, okay, I get it. You know, low contract, you don't give up much in terms of draft capital. Okay, that makes sense. Giving this guy a deal, eight-figure deal, a deal in excess of $10 million a year, which is what it may take, that I am much, much less enthused about. So that's a guy I would look to avoid. And on the same note, I'm going to look at the tackle position. Again, laws of supply and demand, not many quality players available. Donovan Smith, who's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, this guy's just, you know, he's hitting the market, and I guess because he has a lot of experience playing, maybe that's what makes him such a big name. This guy's just not a good player. He had the fourth most pressures allowed in the league, according to Pro Football Focus, at the tackle position. This is not a guy you want protecting your quarterback. Yes, it would be great if the Jets could upgrade a tackle, but is this guy an upgrade? I mean, I don't see it. You know, he's not a guy who handles speed rushers all that well. This is a guy I'd steer clear from completely. Again, fourth most pressures allowed in the league. Now, you consider, okay, fine. Bunch of snaps protecting Jameis Winston. Winston's not exactly the guy who gets the ball out quickest. But you also have to remember, Ryan Fitzpatrick played a substantial number of snaps last year for the Bucs. And look, we know about Fitz. There's one thing about Fitz. He gets the ball out quick, because Fitz is like Brady in the standpoint that he knows exactly where he wants to go before the snap. Now, the difference between Fitz and Brady is Brady is always right. Fitz is wrong a lot, but darn it, even when he's wrong, he knows where he's going right before the snap, and he gets the ball to the wrong spot really quick. So Donovan Smith, I would not touch this guy. I would not touch this guy with a 10-foot pole, to be honest with you. This is not a guy who would interest me at all for the Jets. Guy who's a big name, a guy who's probably going to get a big money deal, just again because of the low number of quality tackles available, but a guy who, frankly, may not be all that quality at the tackle position. So I'm telling you, Brown, Smith, stay away from those two. Locked On Jets today, looking at the free agent market, in particular players I'd like to see the Jets avoid with their tremendous amount of cap space heading into free agency as the new league year begins, within the next few weeks. We talked about a couple tackles. Now I'm going to talk about the wide receiver position. And, this is not a year that I love the wide receiver position. And I think that this guy might get overpaid just in part because there aren't a lot of good receivers available, but also because just the receiver position produces some crazy inflated numbers, which is odd because, you look at guys who are just okay and they're making like $8, $9 million a year. And it's odd because I always feel like the receiver position, there's always somebody who shakes free that you're not expecting to shake free who's available. And that's what plays into why I don't want this guy, because even though there's nobody available on the market right now who looks great, there's always somebody who shakes free. But it's Devin Funchess, who comes from the Carolina Panthers. And look, this is a long-term deal with me because I remember this guy back when I was starting to watch the 2015 draft class. I started watching some games, and I remember I watched one game Funchess played at Michigan, and he moved from tight end to receiver at Michigan. I was like, wow, that guy's great. Like, I was watching him make some plays, and I'm like, wow, this guy's incredible. So I went over and I wrote something online, and I said, well, check out Devin Funchess, how great this guy is. And then all the replies were, what are you kidding me? This guy's soft. This guy's not that good. I was like, so I went back and watched Funchess some more. I'm like, wow, that one game seems like an outlier. This guy does not seem that good to me. And again, that's a good example of why you should never just go based on one game, based your evaluation on one game. But I mean, this was a guy who, it seems like to me that Michigan, he should have dominated because he's 6'4", he's 225 pounds. He's a receiver who can, he's got receiver athleticism, but he's built like a tight end. He played some tight end for Michigan. Well, maybe 225, he's not built like a tight end, but he's a big receiver. This guy should go out there and dominate. I just always felt like this guy left me wanting more. It's like this guy just did not dominate on a consistent basis. We had all the tools to do so. Should be out physicaling guys. He should go out winning contested balls in the air, out fighting people, out leaping people. I just didn't see it. I didn't see the domination. So gets drafted by Carolina, and I'm thinking, okay, well, when's he going to turn it on? Is he going to turn it on year one, year two, year three? And it just never happened. Guy's never had career high 840 yards, 63 catches in 2017. So not even coming off a career year. His contract year was not that spectacular. I just look at this guy, 2,200 yards in 4 years. It's just not. When's it ever going to? And people say, well, maybe it'll. When's it going to happen? If it hasn't happened by now, I get he's 24, maybe. But I've been waiting too long. I've been waiting for 5 years for it to happen, for all to click. And it's not like, I know Cam Newton is not the greatest quarterback in the league, but he's not bad. It's not like this guy's had to deal with the most atrocious quarterbacking in the history of mankind. I mean, Cam Newton's an above average quarterback in this league. So I'm not a Funchess guy. It's a guy who, maybe it's a little too personal because I feel like I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for this guy to finally do it. And I feel like I've finally given up, where I'm just like, you know what? If it was going to happen for this guy, I feel like it would have happened already. So Devin Funchess is a guy who I'm saying avoid if you're the Jets. And then finally, this is a guy I've mentioned on the show before who, I got to be honest with you, the more I watch this guy, the more I wonder why he's viewed as this great commodity. And that's Dante Fowler Jr. My colleague, Zach Goodall, who hosts the Locked On co-host of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, summed up Fowler's career to that point very well in a tweet last August 12th. 2015, third overall pick, tore ACL. 2016, lost starting job week two. 4 sacks as backup defensive end. 2017, arrested. 8 sacks as backup defensive end. 2018, option declined. 1-game suspension for arrest. 1-week suspension for fighting. And that was to August 12th. And it's just a guy who, he was a third overall pick. I get it. He flashed talent at one point. But I think that, the team that signs Fowler, their fans are going to say, well, this guy was the third overall pick. And that's a good reason to bring a guy to camp. If you can get him for cheap, just kick the tires, see what he can do. But that's not a good reason to give a guy you know, a contract that's expensive. And edge rushers are such a commodity in this league that anybody with any sort of name recognition, again, tends to get overpaid. They tend to get a lot of money. I think I'd be surprised if Fowler was not looking at an eight-figure contract annually, you know, something $10 million a year range. And if he's a situational pass rusher, that's one thing. If he's a guy who comes in on third down and passing downs and is cheap, okay. But at $10 million a year to be my featured guy, I'm not so sure I like that. I mean, this is a guy who missed 1 year with an injury, but 16 sacks in three NFL seasons. And you know, his claim to fame right now is he had an eight sacks in 2017 as the situational pass rusher with the Jaguars, where he was playing around 70% of their passing downs, eight sacks on a defensive line with tons of talent surrounding him, which means that it's easy to get sacks because everybody else, the defenses are double teaming and focusing on everybody, on the other guys on your line. So you can go after the quarterback. You know, you get one-on-one matchups, you get all the favorable matchups, eight sacks, that's not that impressive. You know, and again, he didn't have to play running downs. He could save it. He could go in, rest up, and then go in on passing downs and just fly up the field and get after the quarterback. That's not that impressive. 16 sacks in 3 years. After midseason trade to the Rams, two sacks in eight games. And again, he had Aaron Donald. He had Aaron Donald drawing attention. He had Sue on that line. Not like he was lacking. Not like he had to carry the load with the Rams. So now he goes to another team, and he's the featured pass rusher, constantly facing double teams, chips, offensive line sliding in his direction. And those numbers are going to go up. Has to play rundowns. Can't rest on the sideline. Just come in and fly up the field on passing. You think those numbers are going to go up? But you know, I was actually willing to give him a shot after the trade deadline because fine, change of scenery. We'll see what happens here. You know, again, going to a good situation with the Rams, maybe that's what he needs to take off. Well, it didn't really work out all that well, I don't think. He had 23, from the point the Rams got him to the end of the regular season, 23 total pressures. That's 52nd in the league. So a guy who's low-end, second-best pass rusher, high-end, third-best situational guy, okay? How did he do against the run? Well, Pro Football Focus has this stat called the stop. And essentially what this is a tackle that results in a run play being a failure for an offense. So not like, you know, you tackle a guy 50 yards down the field, you get credit for a tackle, and it doesn't really help your team. These are like tackles, you know, stopping a guy for 1 yard on first down, things like that. He had seven of those, tied for 183rd in the league. This was after the Rams trade. So, you know, this was his chance to show what he could do as a full-time player. This was his chance, you know, fresh start. Maybe things don't work out in Jacksonville. Maybe you go somewhere else and do better. It did not happen. So he was a guy I was paying attention to because at the trade deadline, I said that this was not a guy I'd trade for. I wouldn't trade for anybody if I'm the Jets at the trade deadline because Jets weren't going to make the playoffs. So it makes no sense to give up a draft pick for a guy who was only going to be with you under contract for another half year. But I was willing to watch him because once we get to free agency and I don't have to trade for a guy, once I don't have to give anything up for a guy except money, maybe he. So I was watching him. He did not impress me. Now, he had a big postseason, which doesn't mean a whole lot to me because it's a handful. We've seen what he could do over these last 3 years. We've seen, you know, his full handful of snaps in the postseason are supposed to undo years of mediocrity. I just don't see it. You know, and I knew he'd make his mark. I almost could predict he'd make a big play in the postseason. And you knew he'd make some big play to put himself on the map. And he did in the overtime. He actually had a good postseason. You know, he of course, was part of the big interception against the Saints in overtime in the NFC Championship game. Of course, that one play, he'll probably get paid on that. And he'll get paid on the fact he was the third overall pick, which, again, people are going to say, oh, he's the third overall pick. Clearly, he's got talent. Well, here's the problem with that. What's more relevant? How he played in college that got him to be the third overall pick years ago? Or his recent play in the NFL, which of these is more indicative of his talent? I think it's pretty clear. His recent play in the NFL is much more indicative of what you can expect. So this is just not a guy. I mean, you look at it, the record's just very unremarkable. This is a guy who was supposed to be a cornerstone player for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who turned into an afterthought, was deemed expendable by that team. And you have other issues as well. You know, but it's just a guy who's not as productive as his name would indicate. This guy is a big name because he's the third overall pick, but not a guy who's overly productive. Not a guy who's productive at all. Probably not a guy who's as productive as the contract he's going to get because, again, everybody needs a pass rusher, big name available, and supply and demand. I hope the Jets are not the team that supplies him with that contract, though, with a big contract, though. Anyway, that's all for today's show. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, iTunes, Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Have a great Tuesday, everybody, and we will be back tomorrow. We'll talk some more Jets.